Well, hello and welcome to the Tales of the Resistance podcast. This podcast is all about how antimicrobial resistance can impact our lives as researchers, as patients, or just as people in the modern world. I'm Mara Zaltz, and I am a project manager with the I Am Responsible Project, a nationwide outreach effort on antimicrobial resistance. And I'm going to be joined today on the podcast by Amber Patterson.
Hi, I'm Amber. I work on the I Am Responsible team as the graphic designer and communications person.
And so we've been doing this podcast for a little while now. Mostly so far, we've taken the opportunity as new podcasters to listen to experts in the field and learn from them more about what they're doing with antimicrobial resistance and how it's impacted their lives. Today, we're going to take a little bit of a detour, and we're going to look at how people generally are experiencing infectious disease through history by exploring a book written by one of our colleagues, Dr. Kari Nixon at Whitworth University, who we hope will be joining us for a future podcast here soon. So this will probably be the first of several discussions of the book so that we can kind of go into a little bit more depth. The book is called Quarantine Life, From Cholera to COVID-19, What Pandemics Teach Us About Parenting, Work, Life, and Communities from the 1700s to Today. And basically, the structure of the book is a series of lessons learned from previous quarantines, plagues, human attitudes towards disease, and how we can learn from those as we're navigating the current COVID-19 pandemic.
All right, let's get into it.
The first chapter is called Listen to Women, Smallpox, Vaccines, and the World Before Germs. And this section introduces three important concepts, which are looking for answers when you least expect them, or where you least expect them, understanding that public health debates have always been about a tension between individual liberties and the collective good, and realizing that choice is a relative concept. All right, so let's break it down a little bit. Let's explore that first lesson a little bit. Looking for answers where you least expect them. Nixon here uses the examples of Lady Sarah Montagu and the discovery, quote unquote, of vaccines, or the implementation of vaccination within the Western world by her and later by men, to sort of show how this solution, vaccination, which was foreign and feminine in a time when both of those things were not highly valued in Britain, to show that, you know, you can find solutions to some of the world's biggest problems, in this case, smallpox, in unexpected places. So that's kind of the point that she's driving at. Is there anything else that particularly struck you in that section?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that, she was in Greece, and that the women there kind of intuitively knew what to do to make their children better, you know, and that she was open to seeing that and taking that back to London was really fascinating.
Yeah, I like that word that you're using, intuitive, because in hindsight, it seems a lot of epidemiology seems sort of like the rational, it's rational. You know, you are using observation of the world, like, okay, so this person was sick, and we know all the things they did before that. So something in their past, in that immediate past, must have made them sick. Oh, hey, and then this other person who also had that factor, also went to that place, ate that thing, got sick with the same thing. There should be a relationship. But why did it take so long for us to, quote unquote, discover that? Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of reasons for that, you know, like the idea that disease is somehow associated with worth, worthiness, or
stature.
Yeah. And once you have that in your head, and it's kind of hard to separate from that, even though any like clear-eyed observation of the world that you're living in would show you there's these connections and lead you to intuit a kind of approach to take, you know. And there's going to be more stories like that throughout this book, but it is interesting sometimes thinking about disease and our attitudes towards disease and how many times it seems we're doing irrational things. Just we always have, and maybe we always will. We're not rational about where disease comes from.
Right. Well, even she makes the point later about COVID-19 and you know, our assertions that those things happen in countries other than ours, you know, or non-Western areas. And, you know, that's kind of an uncomfortable thing to talk about, but it definitely was prevalent when COVID first came about. It was like, oh, this is an Asian illness, or, you know. So yeah, that is very interesting.
And really true about all a disease. And I want to bring it back real quickly to the topic of our podcast generally, which is antimicrobial resistance. I mean, this is probably something we're fighting against a lot, in the sense that antibiotics are one of the reasons that people think that, you know, that they're one of the tools of modern medicine that has made infectious disease something we have thought of in the past tense. And one of the reasons we were so ill prepared for COVID, the book describes, because we had lost our generational knowledge of how to deal with infectious disease. And that was a really powerful statement in the light of antibiotic resistance, right? Because we're returning to a time when all of the tool set that's going to be described in this book on how to survive the plague, as it were, is going to be really important, that we're all thinking in those terms, not to make it like a fearful thing, but just like those are tools, those are survival techniques that people have learned to have for millennia.
Right.
And all of us, and somehow we lost it. And we just went crazy because we didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when she talks about Defoe and kind of this idea of preventing illness. And I don't think that's something that we think about now, you know, and not that we're intentionally looking to get sick, but that beyond washing our hands, we're not necessarily thinking about what are the steps I need to take to willfully prevent getting sick. And you know, that's a step that needs to be addressed and needs to kind of be reinforced, especially when it comes to antimicrobial resistance, in terms of like, what can we do? What's our responsibility in making sure that we don't get sick, and that, you know, doing what we can, essentially, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we've probably both got off a little bit from this particular section. It's a little look ahead. I did write one other thing down for the section on looking for, so this section that was on looking for solutions where you least expect it, and Lady Montague's story. She says in the book, you know, examine your biases. And this one hit me pretty hard. Because we have, so thinking about it again in the terms of what we're doing on antimicrobial resistance, you know, we have as our slogan, we all have a role, but I've always thought of that as sort of every person has a responsibility, and I will tell you what it is, you know, which is bad, but sure. You know, like I'm educating you on what you should be doing. You could flip that around and be like, everyone has a role. But they also all have a solution, maybe, mm-hmm. You know,
that's a very good point.
It's like, we don't really, like, we know a lot about antimicrobial resistance in terms of why it's happening and some of the things that we can do to manage the crisis and live with infectious disease. And that's a really good application of this book. But there could be things we don't know about that we're not thinking about, you know, that could just totally change the paradigm for antimicrobial resistance and make it a total non-issue that we're just like, I'm not even considering, you know, because I'm like, no, that's not how bacteria work, or, you know, outside the box thinking is super valuable. On the other hand, I just watched that Don't Look Up movie. And I have to say, I had to fast forward through like huge portions of it because it was just hitting too close to home. But there was a...
You're not the first person I've heard say that.
Actually. Yeah, I was just like, I can't watch this. This is like watching a car crash, you know, too painful. But there was the one character, the Mark Rylance character, who was, you know, this sort of tech giant guy, and I know this isn't exactly what they were trying to say with that movie, but it made me think of it when I was talking about examining your biases and looking for outside the box thinking, in the sense that, yes, to a point, like, I think there is a tendency to like maybe valorize the disruptor, you know, mm-hmm. and get to the point where you're like, yes, all solutions, you know, all solutions are valid. Let's bring them
right
to the table. But sometimes, there is a role for expertise. And,
absolutely.
Let's not go down that road and end up getting eaten by a whatever that thing was at the end. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. So, spoiler alert. You haven't watched the movie. Anyway, I guess that was a main point that I got out of that first section on looking for solutions in unusual places for scientific problems. So, you know, that's a good lesson that we can learn, I think.
Yeah, as an aside, when she, one of the things I really love about Nixon's book is how she goes from, you know, storytelling to talking about the issues, is when she talked about the doctor coming to see the infant that had smallpox, and then giving him turpentine, I audibly gasped. I was like,
yes, it was very emotional. That story was very emotional because, you know, you're in the head of the mother.
Yes.
When she's describing all of these treatments that her child is undergoing, and you know, with the hindsight of history, that is wrong, and that child is probably going to be dying
and suffering
so much, and I, in some senses, of course, I hope that is what people reading our work are going to be saying, you know, 200 years from now is basically like, gosh, they had so much to learn, and why were they doing that? And it was so easy and so obvious, and wouldn't that be wonderful?
And that definitely made me think that as well. I was like, and for a moment I was like, well, that's just ridiculous. Why would you do something like that? And then I was like, well, they didn't know, like you said, the hindsight of having 200, 300 years of development. And it's like, so what is it that we don't know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's a little bit like kind of humbling, in a way. Just like we have to examine our biases, we have to be very aware that we don't know everything. But not to o undersell ourselves again, going back to the movie that I just watched. We don't know 100%, but we do know a lot.
Yes.
So, anyway, maybe this conversation is going to make no sense for people who haven't watched the movie. It's on Netflix though, so everyone should be able to. Okay, so let's move on to lesson two. This lesson is called Public Health Debates Have Always Been About the Tension Between Individual Liberties and the Collective Good. And here we're talking a little bit about vaccination, about doing that, giving a vaccine is a sort of infringement of your liberty in a way. It's a and she talks about introduces it here and talks more about it later, but in the sense that public health measures and a lot of medical interventions are, an infringement on your body and your rights in a way for the public good. And so you have to weigh the two things, but know that there is going to be this conflict, and there it is totally rational to be reluctant in some cases, especially in the examples that she was giving for early vaccination, where there's a huge disparity in how it was done for the poor and the wealthy, and the side effects, the highly risk, the very risky procedure that in the pre-sanitation, pre-antiseptic days of the risk of, getting a vaccine that could also give you a different infection,
Infection,
basically.
sure.
So, it's a section that's, I think, a lot about empathy, extending your empathy to others. A lesson, I think, very important lesson for all of us all the time, but especially maybe in this current crisis. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was eye-opening to think about like the disparity between the wealthy and the poor, and being told essentially like your child will get this inoculation, and I'm gonna cut your child open and infect them with pus, and how terrifying that would be, and just having no choice in the matter. I kind of, applying that to today, it made me a little bit more sympathetic to anti-vaxxers, a little, but I don't know. I don't want to get too much into that, but it was a real eye-opener for sure.
Yeah, the lesson that I was getting from reading the section was, like you said, a sympathy,
A broader
a
understanding.
broader understanding, a little bit less anger on my side, it's not as irrational, and stubbornly irrational as I was thinking. I think it is, you know, there's still this, the examples that were being described here are not the way that vaccination is done now. It's a more extreme example of how public health can behave in the world, public health as a pursuit. But, you know, just thinking it, I guess it is me giving a little bit more mercy to those who disagree with me.
Right.
I still don't agree with them, but, you know, I have a little bit more mercy, I guess.
Sure.
So then the last section in chapter 3 was choice is a relative concept. And in this section, Dr. Nixon was talking about how we think we have this false understanding of, you know, getting a vaccine or not getting a vaccine as a choice, because we have not experienced the true horror of a world full of infectious disease. And anyone who has actually lived through that would never say that there was a choice. If there was a way to avoid it, it is a necessity and not a choice. So this is a little bit, you know, coming a slightly different approach from the last one, but, you know, I thought that this was like, you know, what a way to think about it, you know, because like we were talking about earlier, we haven't lived in those times when if you got a paper cut, you could die, sort of thing. And, you know, no, if you had lived in a world where everything and every interaction around you could be your death at any time, I mean, I guess that's still true. There's accidents all the time, but, you know, in a real and frightening way, unexplained, and sudden, and horrific, than the opportunity to avert it would not be a choice.
Right. Yeah. And maybe I'll regret saying this, but I think we're seeing that now with COVID, even though it is highly debated as to whether or not to get vaccinated, until it's personally touched your life and there's more and more of us who it has, you know, it's interesting to me, because it's like, I know people who have died now and they chose not to get vaccinated, and then immediately afterwards, their entire family, you know, did go and get vaccinated, or on their deathbeds they're asking to get vaccinated. And for instance, I have a friend who is has not gotten vaccinated, but she doesn't know anyone who's personally been affected. And when I told her about my experience, she was like struck by that. She was shocked, and all of a sudden you could kind of see her perception changing a bit. You know, so I think it's until it's personally touched you, it's hard to understand or kind of feel the need to concede and do what's necessarily for the better, you know, for the public.
Yeah, 100%. It this is one that really strikes a chord as we're going through this current surge. We're in the Omicron surge here in the United States, but people still I mean, I guess her point in the book was that there you would get to that point and then you wouldn't feel that there was still a choice. So I wonder if she had a chance to rewrite it now. I mean, this was written, I think, before the vaccine was readily available. Or at least written then, and maybe not pub if it wasn't published by then. And I wonder if she had the choice to rewrite this section. I mean, I know that it is written more from a historical perspective rather than a modern, but how would that change, you know?
Right, that
Because
would be
people
a great
continue to,
question.
yeah, people are continuing to. Maybe this thesis didn't quite turn out. People continue to choose not to, like you said.
Double down.
Yeah, we'll have to ask her about that one if when we can get an opportunity to talk to her.
Yes, for sure.
So that brings us to the end of chapter one. So I think we're gonna leave it there for this week, and we'll come back to finish up chapter two next time.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.